This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about big government, not so much as a philosophy of government, but in terms of campaign rhetoric. Big government is a political issue, and it cuts both ways. As far back as FDR and the New Deal, Democrats used deficit spending to create jobs during the Depression, stimulate economic growth, and they painted the opposition as heartless. Republican arguments for balanced budgets bespoke their belief that the government that governs best governs least, and after decades of Democratic dominance, Republican President Ronald Reagan trumpeted a change in his first inaugural.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Republican efforts to tar the opposition as tax and spend liberals worked so well that Democratic President Bill Clinton raised a white flag of sorts in his 1996 State of the Union message.
The era of big government is over.
In this second installment of our occasional series, Who Owns This Issue?, we take on big government. The discussion is not who's spending what and whether that's a good idea or not. Instead, we focus this hour on which party controls this issue and how they hope to use it in the upcoming general election. Later on in the program, a controversy over privacy and distinction in public school. Is it wrong somehow to publish the honor roll? First, though, who owns this issue? Big government. As a voter, how important is this to you? If you're a Republican or a Democrat, how do you defend your party from the label big government, and are the arguments changing? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from our bureau in New York to provide some historical context is Paul Light, professor of public service at New York University, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's very nice to be here.
So when did big government become a useful political slur?
Oh, it's been around since the election of 1800. Thomas Jefferson ran the first War on Waste campaign in American history, argued that we needed a smaller, leaner, simpler government.
Please tell me it was against fraud and waste. He didn't leave out fraud, did he?
No, he got abuse in there too, I suppose. Fraud, waste, and abuse. But you know, it's been around forever.
Now, why is it so effective?
Well, you know, Americans do not like big institutions. They don't like big labor, they don't like big business, and they don't like big government. So it always resonates. And most Americans believe that the federal government in particular wastes a huge amount of money. We did a survey in October and asked Americans, you know, roughly how much do you think the federal government wastes? And 73% said a great deal of money. 20% said a fair amount, and I don't think anybody said not too much.
I think nobody was right. When candidates use the term big government, really, what are they talking about? They're talking about spending, fiscal management, federal, you know, employment programs, what?
It depends. When Democrats talk about big government, as Bill Clinton did in your clip from the 1996 State of the Union, he was talking about total number of employees. Mm-hmm. He was able to argue, quite rightly, that the total number of full-time, equivalent, permanent civil servants was actually down in 1996 compared to 1960. But it was a conceit of sorts. You know, the federal government is much larger than it was in 1960, but he was able to define it narrowly enough to make the claim.
And there's another way to talk about it, which is in terms of spending.
Oh, absolutely. But Americans can't get their heads quite around the total amount of money that the federal government spends. So when you look at the expenditures this year and the size of the deficit, many Americans can't really appreciate just how big it is. You start talking about trillions of dollars, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and many Americans just get lost in the rhetoric.
Another technique that I remember President Reagan was especially fond of was to bring in copies of the actual budget documents, these huge phone book sized installments, and slam them all on a table and say, how can we possibly control and spend all this? And yet, when you start to, what was it, Everett Dirksen's famous term, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah, but you know, when Bill Clinton launched the Reinventing Government campaign, he had forklifts full of federal documents. So it's always a game by both parties to try to paste the big government label on each other. And right now, frankly. It's not sticking to the Democrats and may yet stick to George Bush. It's quite a remarkable turn of events.
Well, we'll have to see how that plays out, and we're going to be talking with some Democratic and Republican strategists as we go on in the hour to see how their candidates may end up using this issue when it comes to the fall election. But as you suggest, can either part of, you know, you can hear arguments that both parties are really the party of big government and big spending, but is either really has any claim to being the party of small government?
I don't really think so at this point. I mean, we've got a huge federal mission out there. Somebody's got to deliver it, and somebody's got to pay for it. Really, the American people are the party of big government. You know, you talk to them about how much the federal government wastes. It's a huge perceived number. But when you ask them what they'd like to see cut, they don't want anything scaled back. They like the federal government's mission. They like all the things that the federal government provides. And actually, you know, that requires a fair amount of spending and a large number of employees. I like to look at it as basically saying the federal government has a mission that the American public wants, and that mission takes about 17 million workers, whether federal employees, state and local government employees, contractors, or grantees of one kind or another, to deliver. Now, is that big or small? It depends on how you compare it to other governments and how you look at it historically, but the American public doesn't want to see us cut back at all.
Let's get some callers involved. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's begin with Alan, who's on the line with us from Syracuse, New York.
Hi. My perspective is that historically, the Republicans created big government when they passed the 14th Amendment in 1867, which allowed the federal government to have jurisdiction over individual citizens as well as the states, that fair and equal treatment under the law thing that's quoted often now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as which party is more likely to...
Alan, someone suggested it began with the law that allowed the income tax.
Oh, no. It started with the passage of the 14th Amendment when the federal government was able to expand its power over the individual states, which is what had led up to the war to begin with, was an expanded federal government. Only with the passage of the 14th Amendment by the Republican Party and the subsequent removal of the former southern states from the participation in the ratification was the 14th Amendment allowed to be passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, I'm nervous, but at this point, 140 years later, both parties are so vested in a central federal government that I don't think either one literally can afford to support anything that doesn't perpetuate the government that we have now.
Well, let's get a response on that from Paul Light.
Well, you can go all the way back to the Louisiana Purchase and argue that you wouldn't have had to have federal government control of the states if you hadn't had the vast expansion in the number of states. I mean, you can track this one pretty much any direction you wish and arrive at a Democratic or a Republican responsibility somewhere relatively far back in history. The anti-big government claim clearly emerged from the Great Society, the argument that Democrats were the party of tax and spend, and that's been hammered home repeatedly over the last 30 years. And Bill Clinton, in all candor, did a masterful job of kind of pulling the Democratic Party out from under that label. And right now, the Democrats are not being as vibrantly portrayed as the party of big government. And that reflects some creative accounting on the part of Bill Clinton.
Just let me interject that the Great Society, of course, was the program of President Lyndon Baines Johnson in the mid-1960s. Alan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much. Well, what you're referring to is essentially the current trends that and how people are currently seen. And as the man said, I think that I apologize for not having his name, but as he said, with Clinton's ability to change the image of the Democratic Party, nonetheless not change the perspective of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party with an expanded federal government, or at least their programs couldn't exist without that expanded federal government.
Well, I mean, you look all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, who ran on this really intense campaign to create a smaller, leaner government, cut taxes, simplify, push responsibility back to the states, left office with a much larger federal government, more programs, more engagement. Every candidate all the way back to the beginning will promise smaller government, but the real underlying pressure over American history has been for expanded services and it's expanded regulation, and that is what the underlying driver is.
Thanks very much for that call. As we continue to look at this issue, though, the Republicans will continue to hammer the Democrats with their tax and spend policies, will they not?
I don't think it's going to stick this year. I mean, you have to create, if you're going to argue that Democrats are tax and spend, you have to deal with the fact that the federal deficit is so dramatically up right now. And, you know, it's a difficult argument to say, well, the Democrats are the party of tax and spend, and we're the party of tax cut and spend, which is really basically mm-hmm. what the argument is. I think Republicans will stay away from it in general and try to fight the election on the basis of other grounds. You've got Joe Lieberman, others making the case. But I don't think the big government label is going to stick to any party right now. I think the big deficit label is likely to stick to George Bush. And whether Americans care about that is an entirely different issue for consultants to struggle with.
Let's get another caller in. This is Dave, who's with us from Sacramento.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I happen to have been watching a repeat of a West Wing episode last night, and it's interesting that this very subject was in it. And there was a line in the show where one of the advisors is speaking to the president, and it just struck so close to something that I believe in. And this whole issue is, frankly, very infuriating to me. Government is about humanity. Government is supposed to be about where, to quote the show, where people come together. Every time I get on the highway and drive, it is because of government that I'm doing it safely. Every time my child does not pick up some infectious disease, it's most likely because government has been involved on a daily basis. And I think that this convenient demonizing of government that is done by both parties is just so nauseating, frankly, that we forget that it is a place where we come together. It is a place where the services we both love and depend on come from. And it's just increasingly annoying as a voter to see this rhetorical battle keep going back and forth and people buying into it as opposed to accepting all the good that comes from government.
Dave, I'll accept your argument, but is there a point for you when government gets too big? I mean, is there ever a point when it gets too big?
Well, I mean, by my personal ideology, where it gets too big is in defense spending and kickbacks for corporate industry,
that's
directly linked to my own ideology.
And thanks very much for that. Paul Light, isn't that really the case? It's both sides at this point are saying, well, yes, there's deficit spending. It depends on what you spend that deficit for, though.
Well, if you look at what the federal government has endeavored to achieve over the last 50 years, for example, it's an extraordinary inventory of effort, and that extraordinary inventory of effort, which Americans applauded and wanted, takes a great deal of money and people to deliver. I mean, at the end of the day, when a candidate goes out on the trail and says, look, I'm against big government, what voters should be asking is, okay, where do you want to see the cut? Do you want to cut our civil rights programs? Do you want to cut Centers for Disease Control? Do you want to cut regulation on the environment? Let's get specific rather than using sort of the general code words for, you know, reducing taxes and so forth. The caller's quite right that government accomplishes a great deal, but whether it accomplishes too much in one area and not enough in another depends really on your political ideology.
And can you incredibly quickly answer the question, going back to Jefferson, when people said, "When we'll get that extra money out of waste, fraud, and abuse," has anybody ever gotten that extra money out of waste, fraud, and abuse?
Boy, it's awful hard to tell. I mean, we do save money from time to time by looking under the seat cushions, but our accounting systems in the federal government are so poor that we really can't tell where a great deal of the money actually is. About $25 billion a year.
Paul Light, thanks very much. Paul Light, a professor of public service at New York University, the author of Government's Greatest Achievements. We'll be back with a Democratic consultant in a moment. This is NPR News. This is Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation. I'm in Washington. We're talking today about which party is in control on the issue of big government and how that will play out in the upcoming election. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to talk about how Democrats hope to use this issue in over the coming election and over the long term is Democratic pollster Al Quinlan, president of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research Incorporated. He joins us today from his home in snowy Washington, D.C., and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Neil.
Democrats have worn the big government label for a long time. Is there a chance now to lose it or transfer it?
Yes, I mean there have been a few points I'd make on that. There have been a few significant changes that have taken place. The first I would just stay right at the top is there is less worry now about taxes and government fees and big government than we've seen in some time, and a entirely different set of priorities have overtaken the notion of high taxes and government fees, and those are health care costs, unemployment, joblessness, the cost of prescription drugs, and preparing for retirement. And on each of those issues, much higher percentages of the American public say they're very worried about those issues now than they are about taxes and government spending in general. The second big development is really the loss of moral authority on this question by the Republicans. We probably saw the statistics today. The CBO is now predicting a $477 billion deficit for 2004, another record deficit. And when we asked the question on our surveys whether people want to go in a significantly different direction than George Bush on the federal budget or go in his direction, 58% want to go in a different direction, only 34% want to go in his direction. So there's been a dramatic shift, which I think has opened the door to Democrats making a case on how government spends its money and what it does with the money it takes in.
Well, if you were consulting the Democrat who emerges from the nomination process and the man who will be ending up facing George W. Bush come the fall, how would you advise him to use this issue specifically?
Well, I talk about a few things. The first is I talk about the priorities of this administration and of what we as Democrats really stand for in terms of how we use the budget and how we spend people's money. I mean, the real issue with big government and government spending is not so much how much government takes in, but it's what are their priorities and how they use that money and what they do with it. And there are two central areas in which the Bush administration is tremendously weak, and we frankly have Democrats have the high ground. The first is the notion of spending in Iraq, too much money in Iraq, and squandering money there because of poor planning and not having put that old effort together right, is a dramatic contrast in the eyes of voters. 57% now think we're spending too much abroad and neglecting problems at home. And when we test the notion that the Bush administration is spending money in Iraq, particularly the $87 billion figure, which was a figure that the public seized on, mm-hmm. memorized immediately, and came to mean misplaced priorities, 63% have serious doubts about where his priorities are in terms of spending money in Iraq and neglecting education issues at home. The second way in which a Democrat can make the whole budget and government spending issue work for them is the notion of a shared burden. More than anything else, the American public wants a shared burden, and they believe very strongly that the powerful and the very wealthy and the major corporations get away with a great deal and don't bear their share of the burden. when we tested one of the strongest arguments we've seen in every survey we've done and every focus group we've done on this administration has to do with the notion of passing large tax cuts for the very powerful corporations, the wealthiest, and putting less money into education for ordinary families, the cleanup of toxic waste sites, and health care. So these two issues, sort of home versus abroad and who is bearing the burden, are the two issues that really set the stage for debate about priorities within the budget.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Tom, who's with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Yes.
Hi.
I was wondering whatever happened to Bill Clinton's program on reinventing government. How come we haven't heard much about that, and what is the consensus as to the results of that program, if there is one?
Al Quinlan?
Well, I think what we saw in the results of that program throughout the latter part of the 1990s was true fiscal responsibility, in which we eliminated some duplicating government agencies. The Clinton-Gore administration actually did a tremendous amount of reform within government. They cut a great deal of spending. They enacted a welfare reform bill that produced dramatic changes in that particular area, and put a high priority on maintaining some type of fiscal responsibility in terms of money coming in and money going out.
Yet,
that has all been thrown, I think, out the window with this administration due to their desire to enact, particularly large and irresponsible tax cuts and tax breaks and economic policies that benefit a few, and have not really shown any real interest in maintaining or strengthening those reforms.
Tom?
Yeah, I was curious because I hadn't heard Al Gore, who supposedly was in charge of this, a large part of the project, didn't say much about it to my recollection in 2000, and the Democratic candidates now aren't even mentioning it as far as I can hear, so I'm wondering why not.
I paid some close attention to that campaign, Tom, and he did talk about it. It didn't seem to cut awfully well in that particular contest, and I don't know, Al, if you would agree.
Yes. No, Al Gore did talk about it to a large extent during the campaign. But I want to go back to one of the other point I made earlier in terms of this year and these Democratic candidates is there's a particularly strong case that they have to make, not only in terms of fiscal responsibility and reinventing government, making government work more efficiently, but also the priorities that government has and the priorities that guide its expenditures is very, very critical, I think, in this particular debate.
Tom, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask a question, Al Quinlan, before we let you go. And you say clearly the Republican side has been engaging in a fair amount of deficit spending. It's hard to dispute the facts, but they might point to something like the argument over Medicare, for example, and say that the Democratic argument against the Medicare bill and the prescription drug benefit is that it wasn't big enough.
Well, I think there are two. I can go into a long discourse on the Medicare bill. The reality is,
but in terms of big government, it seems both sides want to spend.
Yes, but that is true. Both sides do want to spend. The difference is one side wants to be fiscally responsible in terms of ensuring that the revenues come in to spend for the priorities that the American public is really looking for, which is improving our schools, lowering health care costs, providing prescription drug coverage, and making sure we clean up, environmental wasteland and toxic waste sites and those sorts of things without letting companies get away with abandoning those sites. But the difference is the Republicans and the Bush administration in particular has refused to ask the very wealthy and the biggest corporations to pay their fair share in that burden sharing, and that's the biggest difference. And that the Medicare prescription drug bill is not what's producing this budget deficit. The massive tax cuts that are tilted very much toward the wealthiest and the big corporations are what have produced these huge deficits that we're going to be living with for the next 10, 15 years.
Al Quinlan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Al Quinlan, a Democratic strategist, president of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research, and he joined us from his home here in Washington, D.C. Now we're going to cross the river to Great Falls, Virginia, to talk with Bruce Bartlett, a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, a nonpartisan think tank advocating smaller government. Thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Your group advocates a shrinking role for government. Do you see much daylight between the Republicans and the Democrats right now?
No, it's more an issue of how they would spend the money. They both want to spend more. They just want to spend it differently.
And your advocacy would say a pox on both their houses. We've got to get a balanced budget.
Well, I don't really particularly care about whether the budget is balanced or not, but I do care a lot about whether spending is going up. I think there's an enormous difference between a deficit resulting from lower revenues and one resulting from higher spending. I think higher spending is per se bad. I think lower revenues, it depends on how they came about. I think the current reduction in federal revenues is due almost entirely to the economic slowdown. And I think there's very little of it as of today that is a result of the tax cut, maybe 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we had not taken the actions we've taken to cut taxes in 2001 and again in 2003, we would still be mired in a much, much deeper economic recession than we are. Actually, we're well into a recovery, and I think people would be complaining very, very bitterly that the administration did nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, recently, as you know, a number of conservative critics have appeared in the press grumbling about President Bush's fiscal policy. Is there anything in particular that sparked this dissent? We seem to read about it coming out of the Medicare debate.
Well, for me, I think the Medicare bill, the drug bill, was a major issue. It's one thing to waste money on, you know, pork barrel projects, building unnecessary roads and bridges and federal office buildings and such. Those are one-time expenditures, which may be unjustified, but they don't go on and on forever. But when you create new entitlement programs, I think history shows that they are very, very difficult to control, and I think it was just disastrous for the administration to do this. I think they have spent literally trillions and trillions of dollars to buy re-election next year when it was totally unnecessary. In fact, there was a poll out last week from the Washington Post that showed that the opinion of people towards Republicans on the drug issue has actually fallen since they passed the legislation. It was extremely unwise, both politically and economically, in my opinion.
And is this politically going to hurt the Republican Party in the coming election?
No, because they were very clever about how they went about doing it. There's virtually no money spent on the Medicare, the drug bill, until 2006, and then it rises very rapidly. So this year, the Republicans or the administration, whoever, can go out and tell people about the great things that they've done for them without bearing any cost or responsibility. But when the money starts coming out of the federal treasury very, very rapidly, which it will, sooner or later they're going to have to rein in those costs. And I think at that point there's going to be a massive backlash. And I think that it was just very, very unwise.
We're speaking with Bruce Bartlett, a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. We're talking about the issue of big government. Who owns this issue? It's part of an occasional series here on Talk of the Nation. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's go now to Brian. And Brian joins us from Potsdam, New York.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Well, I just got a couple comments to make. As far as, like, large government go, as far as the Democrats and the Republicans go, I mean, how do you start cutting down big government when it comes to all the things that we are with as far as the government, with AIDS and the war in Iraq, with homelessness, with everything? I mean, where do you start? That's my...
We're having trouble with Brian's phone, but Bruce Bartlett, he asked a good question. People seem to like all these government programs.
Well, that's always been the fundamental dilemma, is everybody wants a lower spending and a small government and a balanced budget, but they're opposed to cutting any particular program. There's not one single program, with the possible exception of foreign aid, that you could get any significant number of people to say, yes, this should be lower. And that's why you shouldn't get started on these programs, because they are very, very difficult, if not close to impossible, to cut once you've started them. And that's why we have this ratchet effect of government just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think we're slowly traveling down the route of Europe, where they have massive government benefits. Everybody's on the dole, and they pay a price for this in terms of very high unemployment, slow economic growth. But they don't care.
They also, some would argue, have a pretty good social net, everybody has health insurance.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can make your choices. I just think that Americans have historically tended to be more individualistic than Europeans. The people who founded this country came here to get away from that kind of thing. And as I said, we're going down the same path. We're just traveling a little slower.
Let's get another caller in, and this is Nestor, who's with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Wow. Hi. How you doing?
Okay.
I was calling to address something that I'd not really ever heard on the radio before, and that is half of our money from annual taxations goes straight into paying the interest on our overall debt. Not our deficit, our annual deficit, but the debt that we've compiled since the 80s, 70s, 40s. What can we do about that?
Well, I don't think that number is quite right. I mean, interest on the debt is a large number, but a vast bulk of that goes into trust funds. It's paid to the government's just paying the money to itself. What economists pay attention to is debt held by the public, and interest on that is the second or third largest item in the budget, but it's certainly not anywhere near half. I think the main problem, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to reduce that burden. You can do the same thing that homeowners do. You can refinance your debt. We've done a lot to make the burden of the debt much less than it used to be. But it's certainly a problem, and it's worth noting that almost all or a big chunk of the decline in government spending during the Clinton years that gave rise to the large surpluses we had resulted from a decline in interest on the debt. So it wasn't like any programs were being cut. It was just interest.
We just have about a minute or so with you before we have to go to a break. But is fiscal policy, do you think, a make-or-break issue for voters, even those who describe themselves as fiscally conservative?
This year, no. I think, and the main reason for that is because national security trumps all these other issues. There's a lot of grumbling among conservatives, but they will all vote for Mr. Bush in November.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bartlett is a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, and he spoke with us from his home in Great Falls, Virginia. When we come back from a short break, we'll be talking with Grover Norquist, who will be talking about how he thinks the Bush administration has got it about right. So we'll continue our discussion of this. Here's a few of the stories that NPR is working on this afternoon. The Democratic presidential hopefuls crisscross New Hampshire today, doing last-minute campaigning. Polls released today show that Senator John Kerry leads the pack. And a special Connecticut House Inquiry Committee will recommend whether Governor John G. Rowland should be impeached for lying about accepting gifts for his summer house. You can hear more on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. We'll be back on Talk of the Nation in just a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about who owns big government as a political issue. And joining us now from his office in Washington, D.C. is leading small government proponent Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Good to have you back on the program.
Glad to be with you.
You are months, you've been memorably quoted as saying that your goal is to get government down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub. As President Bush's administration comes up with something on the order of $500 billion in deficits, why do you think is the Republican Party still the one to do that?
Well, the goal of limited government, hyperbole aside, is an important one, and I think the president's committed to it. When you have something like the war on terrorism, the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, wars are expensive things. They are bad for taxpayers and other living things, and are always problematic, not just for the amount of money that gets spent on national defense, but because when the guys who run the other departments of government see you throwing out buckets and buckets of cash on national defense issues, they get itchy and spend a lot as well. So we've seen an explosion of spending, not just in homeland security, not just in national defense. I think there are a couple of things that this administration is doing that convince me and their allies in the small government community that they're serious. And I would offer the base closings legislation. The secretary is looking to close a quarter of the bases domestically, a quarter of the bases overseas.
These are military bases.
Military bases, which is very important, something that both Secretary Rumsfeld and the president pushed through even during a period of war. The transformation efforts at the Department of Defense, where they've making it easier to hire and fire people, liberalizing the labor laws in the Defense Department, which, you know, could take 9 months to get somebody hired. They were using people who were uniformed officers for desk jobs because that was the only way you could have any flexibility at all.
Mm-hmm.
Those sorts of reforms are very important. Competitive sourcing is something that your listeners are going to hear more and more about. They've been doing it at the Defense Department, and the guys who mow the lawn at the Pentagon, government workers, every 3 years now they'll bid that out, and if somebody in the private sector has a lawn mowing business, he can say, well, I could do that for $5,000. And if the private sector competitor can do it for less, then they get the job. But you also go to the government workers who are doing it right now, and half the time they reorganize themselves, they restructure, and they win the bid. Whether the bid is contracted out to a private company or stays within the government employees, the cost drops by 20% to 30%. So, you know, I was listening in as Bruce Bartlett was saying, gee, people are hesitant to give up projects or services the government's doing. You can, for 850,000 of these civil service jobs in the United States at the federal level, 850,000 have a private sector competitor, somebody who does this in the Yellow Pages. We can drop the cost of providing the same services, either with the present government workers restructuring themselves or with a private company, dropping that 20 or 30%. That's a savings of $25 billion a year, and nothing that used to be done by the government is not being done anymore. It's just being done more competently, and as we learn from, you know, the Polish steel industry or the American telecommunications industry, monopolies, whether they're run by the government or the private sector, are notoriously inefficient. It's competition that makes people improve things. So this is an area where you're looking at this administration, in the middle of everything else it's doing with the war on terrorism, is keeping focused on trying to reduce the cost and inefficiencies in government. So that's one project line that I think the president deserves a lot of credit for.
Let's get a listener on the line. This is Joe, who's with us from Chico, California.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, look, in 1980, I got to vote for the first time, and my favorite button I wore was, there's no government like no government. I was one of those that ran with Ronald Reagan, and I consider myself quite fiscally conservative. And I would disagree with your previous guest speaker, Bruce Bartlett, that fiscal conservatives won't bail. I just did. I switched parties. I just cannot take what George Bush is doing. I know Barry Goldwater must be turning in his grave right now.
Which party did you switch to?
I switched to the Democratic Party. Every time I see a Republican administration come in, I see deficits growing. Every time I see through history, I should be fair, because in the Office of Management of Budget, every administration since Woodrow Wilson has outspent the one before. What I'm concerned about is what this current president is spending money on. And, for example, you talked about competitive sourcing. Well, that would have been nice in Iraq, where Halliburton is now overcharging our own army, which is a different subject. I'm sorry, I'm very nervous.
That's okay. Sometimes we are, too.
Yeah, but, you know, this whole war in Iraq has nothing to do with terrorism. If we want to spend money on fighting the war on terrorism, we should have went to where the terrorists are, not trump up some false accusation about a war. And if you also look at the history of the Office of Management and Budget, you'll see that government revenue, where the government gets its money, has gone through a major shift. Before World War II, 30 to 40% of revenue for the federal government came from corporate taxation. That's now down to less than 10%, and whereas the individual was paying around 7 to 8% prior to World War II, we're now paying the 40%. So there's been this huge shift.
Joe, I think I have to intervene and say individuals are doing a lot better than they were just before the start of the Second World War, when, if you'll be reminded, we were in the middle of the Great Depression. But Grover Norquist, let's get back to you and the question of Joe's switch from party to party. Do Democrats, do you think, have more to offer him in terms of a party of a small growth?
No, unfortunately, I would be very happy if the Democratic Party went back to where it was 100 years ago, when it was the party of limited government and the party of low taxes. FDR campaigned on a commitment to keep us on the gold standard and cut the federal budget by 25%, which is not what he did. He actually discontinued Herbert Hoover's policies of high taxes and high tariffs and high spending, which helped take the first session in American history
in
10 years.
I think we could find a lot of campaign promises on this issue that would cut both ways. But go ahead, Grover.
No, the point there was the Democratic Party used to be the party of smaller government, limited government, and actually low taxes 100 years ago. At some point, the two parties switched. If you want to rein in government, it's not only necessary to reelect President Bush and a Republican House and Senate, it's also the responsibility of those of us in the taxpayer movement and the conservative movement. We need to make spending a top priority. One of the reasons why I think it has not been as high a priority as otherwise is, if you've looked at all the things that people have asked President Bush to focus on, rebuild the military, cut marginal tax rates, all sorts of various project lines, we the movement have not sufficiently put budget restraint front and center. I think you're seeing that happen now, and certainly the president in his new budget and in his presentations is focused on reining in spending. But it is fundamental reforms, competitive sourcing, reforming Social Security, so instead of being a Ponzi scheme where money comes in today and goes out tomorrow, we transfer it to a fully funded, individually held savings program. You do that, and you've just dropped total federal spending by 20% and made Americans retire with significant wealth in their pockets rather than on a stipend, disappearing stipend from the federal government. So it's those reforms. And base closings, again, during the when Clinton was president, he interfered with the base closings commission and saved several bases from being closed down or shrunk for political purposes. Because of that, the Congress refused to re-up the base closings bill as long as he was president, because they didn't trust that it would be used to save money. They thought it would be used for political purposes.
Grover Norquist, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but we wanted to thank you very much for your time today. Grover.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Oh, sure. Okay. Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform, a small government advocacy group. We reached him at their offices in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.